Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 104, recorded Tuesday, March 19th, 2013. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: status free fall and TSA knife fight. Well, I'm coming to you from outside the bathroom of the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, doing a quick day trip or up and back to New Orleans for a meeting. I was actually going to do the recording in the bathroom, but the exhaust fan just whenever you turn the light on, the exhaust fan goes off. And there are obviously no windows in the bathroom, so it would make it a little difficult to see what I'm doing. So I'm standing just outside the bathroom of the Hotel Monteleone. So as this might suggest, I've been on the road more than not since the last episode. A couple of days in New York, 18 hours in Detroit, 17 hours here in New Orleans, but mostly in Portland, Oregon. So four trips since the last episode. I've experienced the full range of Portland weather, 38 degrees and drizzle, all the way up to 58 degrees and drizzle. But I'm sort of nowhere near close to testing the full range of Oregon beers, no matter how hard I try. And the listeners who are friends of mine on Untappd have seen how hard I have been trying. My face has scrolled across the top of the digital menu board at Bailey's Tap Room, I would say, a few too many times. And though I joke about the weather in Portland, you know, and who doesn't, even the natives apologize, I enjoy flying into Portland. I end up taking the MAX light rail into the city center, and I've got a 10-minute morning walk from the hotel to the office. No rental car, no traffic. I mean, there is the occasional street person, but I'll tell you, they're a lot more polite than the homeless I've run into in San Francisco or, say, Philadelphia. Now, one of those Portland trips was in the midst of what I will call stupid travel, when I get committed to back-to-back meetings thousands of miles apart. I think I told the story a couple of years back when I did a Chicago to London to Denver trip in 2 days. And that was probably the stupidest trip I've done. Now, this one that I'm talking about wasn't near as bad. It was just Chicago to Portland to Detroit and then back to Chicago in 2 days. I mean, it went okay. I mean, as well as can be expected, right up until the last day. I had a breakfast meeting in lovely scenic Livonia, Michigan, a western suburb of Detroit. Though not exactly a cultural capital, it does have the redeeming value of not being very far from Detroit Metro Airport, and a good thing, because it started dumping snow that morning. And not a big problem. I called Amex Travel. There was an earlier flight to Chicago with seats available, so I head out to the airport. Once there, I go up to the kiosk to change my flight, but it tells me that there's no flight available. So I walk now up and down the concourse at the Delta Terminal in Detroit Metro, just trying to find the right line to talk to a person to change my ticket. Now, I have no status on Delta, so I'm not allowed into any of the medallion lines, and there were sort of gatekeepers there to keep me from getting into those lines. I'm not flying first class or internationally, so I don't qualify for any of those lines. I finally walk up, through an empty line that was for self-service baggage drop. Hey, can you help me? A woman points to the kiosk. You can make all your changes there. But I can't. I just tried. She sort of shrugs and turns away. Now, look, I'm trying to play nice and follow the rules, which has now gotten me into this, sort of customer service black hole that's, protected and bounded by poorly programmed kiosks and sort of indifferent employees. Now, luckily, the baggage claim woman's shrug was not shared by all her coworkers. On another lap around the terminal, looking perplexed and now a bit annoyed, a couple of red-jacketed Delta employees stop me. I tell them my story, and they take me directly to the front of the medallion line, and I'm taken care of. And it was great. I thank all of them multiple times for helping me solve this problem, and then I head to the gate. The flight is delayed about 30 minutes because the inbound plane is late. Now, This is not surprising given the snow. I mean, no big deal. We finally board the plane, and then we wait. Now, I know that the de-icing at Detroit Metro isn't done at the gate. It's done midfield. So I know we're not waiting for the spray truck. 30 minutes later, what do you know? A maintenance guy shows up with a screwdriver to replace the latch on an overhead bin in first class that was stuck shut. God, I hope that was more critical than it seems. Then we wait 20 minutes for the paperwork to clear and then head to de-icing. I eventually got home just 30 minutes earlier than if I had stayed on my original flight. It just seemed that that was definitely the definition of stupid travel. Following up, a couple of Sundays ago, Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast pinged me on Google Talk. Hey, want to be a guest on This Week in Travel with Jen Leo and me? Sure, when? I said, now. And then an invite to a Google Hangout popped up. Oh, video. Great. I had just finished working out, so I grabbed a ball cap before I clicked into the Hangout. It was a lot of fun. Chris, Jen, and another guest, Corey Taratua of the Irish Fireside podcast. After about an hour, we wrapped it up. But then, when Chris went to save the Hangout, he couldn't find the button. He looked all over the console. Turns out he had set up, I think what it turned out was, he had set up the Hangout as a private Hangout instead of a public broadcast Hangout. So no recording, and probably the smallest audience of This Week in Travel ever. And then the next night, Chris pinged me again. Hey, are you free? I have the, you know, I've got it set up correctly this time. And so we all pop back in. Chris and Jen's show starts with a rundown of the week's travel news headlines. I think Chris curates it in Reddit. Corey then talked about The Gathering, which is not sort of the latest teen vampire book, but instead is this year's big tourist program in Ireland, which reminded me of my favorite Ireland travel moment, running low on clean clothes during a postgraduate tour of Ireland. I found a laundromat next to a pub in Cork, and it was run by two very nice Irish women who took pity on me. And I helped, I think, the matter by looking especially pitiful. They took care of my laundry while I had a couple of pints of Murphy's Stout next door. And yes, I did tip them. It was good fun, both the laundry and the Google Hangout for This Week in Travel. They were both very good fun, and it was fun remembering that. Anyhow, I've got a link to the YouTube video on the Travel Commons site, and I'll also put a link to the audio podcast. Chris takes the video and then strips it out, makes it into just an audio podcast, posts it up onto iTunes, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes. In the last episode, I talked about a post in a Flyer Talk thread that said, the content of the Travel Commons podcast is interesting, but the guy's voice is monotone and metronomically slow. Now, I had said during that, I had said it was probably from a former listener, but that's not true. The person who asked me not to use their name dropped me a note last week saying, hey, I'm still very much a regular listener and enjoy your podcasts. I'm Irish, but living in China. It's tough for a single podcaster to inject variety and drama into his voice. By definition, it ends up being an unspontaneous scripted monologue. That's why it's always easier to listen to an interview format or a two friends chatting format. Well, I'll tell you, from my standpoint, this is spot on, and the point was driven home to me again, being one of four voices in Chris and Jen's This Week in Travel. You know, being part of four folks chatting, you're not responsible for all the content. I'll tell you, trying to write 20-some-odd minutes of interesting content is the main reason for the longish gaps between Travel Commons episodes. But thanks for the note, and I am glad to hear that I've kept it interesting enough to keep you subscribed. I'm heading out to Madrid and Barcelona at the end of this week for spring break with my wife and daughter. We have some tours set up, a market tour in Madrid, suggested by Craig Martin from the Indie Travel Podcast, and a wine tour in Priorat, my favorite Spanish wine region. So I figured it would be handy to have a local Spanish phone number. Now, I often do this when we're somewhere for more than a week. You know, I bring an unlocked phone and buy a local SIM card. When we visited Cape Town, South Africa a few years back, the prepaid SIMs were sold at the checkout line next to the cash register. You know, sort of gum, breath mints, SIM cards. It's just another impulse buy. Now, they had two or three brands. I was flipping through them trying to figure out which one to buy because I've got no idea. When the guy behind me in line taps me on the shoulder and said, "You looking to buy a SIM card?" Yeah. Don't buy any of these. None of the numbers are good. I have better ones in my car. Okay. So we bought our groceries, the guy and I, and I followed the guy out into the parking lot. He opened his trunk and had about 50 SIM card packages. Now, they were looked just like the ones that were hanging next to the register. He starts thumbing through them. Here's a good number. Now, I tell you, I couldn't honestly tell the difference between this one and the one I was looking at in the grocery store, but I don't know, whatever. So I give him some Rand. I put the SIM into my Motorola V551 that for some reason Singular had shipped to me unlocked, and boom, I was able to book a table for dinner down the road. It was very handy. So I still have that V551 in a plastic bin in my garage, buried under a bunch of other sort of semi-obsolete electronics that I keep thinking I'll have some use for. But no, its time has passed. When we're in Spain, I'll probably want to make a couple of calls, but we'll be more likely to be sending texts or using the web to get directions or looking at maps or posting pictures, not something that a 7 to 8 year old phone is going to be able to handle. So looking around at unlocked smartphones, I mean, I'll tell you, the market's getting a lot better. I mean, Google's Nexus 4 is a great phone. You buy it unlocked, about $300. Blue Products just announced a new Life series that also look good, basically look like knockoff Samsung Galaxies for, you know, just over $200. Very, very tempting. But as I was sort of rummaging around the other day, I actually pulled out my old iPhone 4 out of my desk drawer and went filled out AT&T's online unlock request. You know, they spun on it for a couple of days and then sent me an email saying that I'd been approved. But to complete the unlocking, I needed to find a non-AT&T micro SIM to finish the job. And I wasn't going to get that done over in Spain because my iPhone is synced or is connected to the iTunes that's on my desktop PC in my office. So anyhow, I tried to cut down another larger SIM that I had from Simple that I had actually used to unlock an older iPhone, my iPhone 3G. But I don't know, I must have clipped a contact because that just it just didn't work. It didn't the iPhone 4 just didn't recognize it. Well, then I saw a T-Mobile offer, $1 to have a micro SIM shipped to my house. Done. It showed up a couple days later. I dropped it into the 4, synced it to iTunes, and bingo, it told me I was unlocked. So now I'll buy a local SIM when I hit the ground in Madrid. Now, however, unlike Cape Town, at least my understanding is, and Craig Martin from Indie Travel confirmed it, is that I actually need to register with my passport to buy a SIM, and I can only buy, I think, two per passport. So, it doesn't sound like I'm going to be riffling through some guy's trunk outside the SIM store in Madrid this time. And finally, we've talked in the past about old planes. I've talked about how I avoid flying American's MD-80s because the damn things just break down all the time. Well, on my stupid travel, I ended up on Delta's version of an MD-80 on one leg of my Portland to Detroit flight. I think I had a connection through Minneapolis, so I think it was the Minneapolis-Detroit leg. And I tell you, it must have been an old Northwest plane because the interior looked like one of the DC-9s that they had renovated. And a DC-9, of course, is a predecessor to an MD-80. It was ancient. Now, quite a change then when I walked onto a brand new United 737-900 last week. last Monday for a flight back out to Portland. I think it still had a bit of that, you know, new plane smell to it. I mean, it had mood lighting and sort of regular electric plugs, you know, the regular Blade electrical plugs, kind of like Virgin America. It had the push-up, sloping-up overhead bins, kind of like the 777. Now, the air vents were some sort of goofy leaf-like construct, which, I don't know, took me a minute to figure out. But what caught my eye actually was what was missing. There were no video screens anywhere. I mean, was this a new trend? Was United cutting weight and maintenance costs, acknowledging sort of the trends of passengers to bring their own entertainment devices? No. As we were pushing back, the flight attendant apologized for the lack of video. She said that the plane was so new it hadn't had a chance to be retrofitted for in-flight entertainment yet. So much for trend spotting. But hey, if you spot a trend or have a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use the voice memo app on your iPhone or something like Easy Voice Recorder on your Android phone to record and send in an audio comment. You can always send a Twitter message to @mpeacock, or you can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or, as always, you can go sort of old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com.
Please listen to me and don't disagree. Even as we fight, it doesn't matter to me. Please listen to me and don't disagree. As we fight, it doesn't matter to me.
The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is status freefall. A couple of episodes ago, I talked about how my summer travel sabbatical was going to significantly impact my frequent traveler statuses. I was kind of reminded of that on Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, when I was playing the Pogues and the song If I Should Fall from Grace with God came on. I mean, for a couple of years, I was Global Services on United. I was the god of their Mileage Plus program. I mean, it was rare that I didn't get a first-class upgrade. And when I consciously chose to sit in coach, like when I was flying with my family, the flight attendants would come back, ask me why I was in the back, and then bring me free drinks from first class, which would generate, you know, sort of quite a hairball of emotions with my wife, some sort of tangled mess of amusement and disgust. So when I fell out of that rarefied air to just plain 1K, it was a bit of an adjustment. I mean, where did all the kissing up go? But this year's fall, this was going to be a much steeper fall, from 1K all the way down to Premier Silver, the lowest level of status. Now, I was close to keeping gold, sort of the 50,000-mile level, and I probably should have done a mileage run to the West Coast, but I don't know. The holidays, the Christmas holidays crept up on me faster than I thought. Now, United graciously offered a couple of times to sell me the three or four segments that I needed to get back to gold, but that was going to cost $650. So I passed. And so I dropped to silver on February 1st, just in time for me to start these Chicago to Portland hauls, where really United has the only convenient direct flights available. Now, so I get dropped down one boarding group from the first to the second group, which, you know, I'll tell you, hasn't been that big of a deal. I haven't had a problem finding overhead space. I mean, the bigger pain is not being able to pre-book Economy Plus seats for free. I mean, for all of United's faults, the extra legroom of Economy Plus has always kept me coming back, especially for, you know, a 4-plus-hour flight out to the West Coast. But as Silver, I can't book Economy Plus for free like I could as 1K. Now, I either pay for it or I wait 24 hours before flight time when I can book it for free. Being cheap and not being able to expense, you know, any sort of upgrades, I end up waiting. Now, I haven't had a problem yet, but the O'Hare to Portland flights don't seem to be sort of the highest volume legs. Not a huge issue, more of a discomfort than anything. But when you're spending 8 to 9 hours a week on a plane, or more, depending on delays, you know, a couple of inches in the seat starts to matter. It's interesting, though, to compare United's approach to the approach taken by hotel brands. Now, I'd been Marriott top tier, platinum, for many years. I mean, and I would say earning it the hard way by spending almost 75 nights in the Renaissance Marriott in downtown Detroit, a property that is legendary for its awfulness. When I changed jobs 3 years ago, though, Hilton properties were much more convenient to my offices, and so I switched. Now, that first year, I made Hilton's top-tier diamond and certainly didn't requalify, you know, certainly didn't spend 75 nights at a Marriott to requalify for platinum. But Marriott didn't drop me. They instead sort of soft-landed me, dropping me one status level a year. And I tell you, I appreciated that, and I kept staying with them. Indeed, you know, when I was in Livonia a couple of weeks ago on my stupid travel, I was staying at a Courtyard Marriott. And this year, you know, Hilton kept me at Diamond, even though I didn't meet their thresholds. I'm sure they'll start to drop me next year, but they too, like Marriott, they'll keep some of my business. And these programs are businesses. What started out as a way to keep passengers loyal in the early scary days of airline deregulation has turned into a cash-generating business in its own right. In 2010, it was estimated that Citibank paid American Airlines more than $1 billion for miles that then Citibank distributed to Advantage credit card holders. I mean, it made sense then that one of the first things American did when it filed for Chapter 11 last year was to tell everyone that their miles were safe. Employee pensions may take a haircut, but not Advantage balances. Now, it's one thing to get de-statused because I didn't make thresholds, but it's a whole nother thing to get crammed down a peg because they make a new level above you. Now, this has been going on for a while. At the beginning of American's Advantage program, which really was the original frequent flyer program, there was only one status level, gold. And then they added a new status level, platinum, and then executive platinum as ways to further differentiate frequent flyers and give them sort of a new brass ring to chase, kind of the original gamification play, but with early boarding instead of badges as rewards. Of course, if you're just hitting the top of the old structure, you're now down a peg when the new level gets created, which you can understand, you know, for the annual awards levels. But what about if it's associated with a lifetime status award? United Million Mile Flyers used to receive lifetime premier executive status, kind of the middle tier that's akin to American's platinum level status. Now, both of these levels, premier exec and platinum, would earn 100% mileage bonuses, basically, you know, earn 2 miles for each mile flown. American is still that way, but when United merged with Continental, Premier Exec became Premier Gold, the mileage bonus was reduced to 50%, and a new level, Premier Platinum, was inserted above it. So if you invested dollars and time hitting 1 million miles on United, the return on that investment just got cut in half. And, of course, someone sued. And actually, last month, the judge rejected United's bid to throw the case out, saying the court finds it plausible that the defendant, that being United, had a contract with Million Mile members, which differed from the contract that they had with other Mileage Plus members. So I guess if you've been around long enough, even the airlines have to bring you in for a soft landing. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is TSA knife fight. Well, the TSA's announcement that they'll allow small non-locking knives and various pieces of sports equipment past airport security checkpoints seemed to be executed with the agency's sort of typical obliviousness. I mean, they didn't warn or try to pre-sell the idea to folks that have a stake in the decision, airlines, flight attendants, even air marshals. Instead, they just dropped an announcement and expected everyone to just go along. I mean, are they surprised that everyone is questioning their judgment? I mean, remember, this is the one federal agency that is more despised than the IRS. Now, even if the TSA's threat analysis that they go through in their announcement, even if that analysis is correct, I mean, what good does it do to announce this change? I mean, I can't remember the last time I was in a TSA line and heard someone say, "Damn it, I should be allowed to take my penknife," or "Damn it, I should be allowed to take my hockey stick," or "Damn it, I should be allowed to take 3 golf clubs instead of 2 on a plane." I mean, people are complaining about taking their shoes off. They complain about having to dump their water out. But nobody complains about having to leave their knife behind. I mean, and yet this is the issue that the TSA decides to make a stand on. Amazing brilliance. Now, the sporting equipment change, you know, who decides 3 golf clubs instead of 2? I tell you, that just doesn't make any sense to me. They're too big for the overhead bin anyhow. But the penknife thing, I mean, the better approach just would have been just to change the policy and not announce it. I mean, anybody who's observant has noticed that the TSA has eased up on liquid or semi-liquid toiletries. I mean, while you still can't bring a full-size bottle of shampoo onto a flight, and wait a minute, really, who needs to? I mean, hotels provide an unlimited amount of toiletries, and hey, if you're staying at a vacation rental, I mean, the first thing you're doing when you arrive is going to the grocery store to buy food, so buy the shampoo there. Now, I mean, I haven't had a screener pull out any of my hair stuff or my travel size toothpaste in years. I mean, they're still technically forbidden, and I tell you, the screeners can still see them, but they're rightly focused on more dangerous things. I mean, a more practical, maybe a less tone-deaf TSA would just let their screeners ignore penknives and just leave it at that. Now, people say that the September 11th attacks changed everything. Well, you know, I'll tell you, they changed many things, including how passengers react to terrorist attacks. I mean, before September 11th, the counsel to passengers was always to be passive, not to put yourself in harm's way, not to stick up. Look, you're just a bargaining chip. Let the professionals negotiate with the terrorists, give them money, safe passage, release a prisoner, bring in a helicopter, and odds were you were going to get out okay. Now, September 11th absolutely changed that, and the attempted attacks after September 11th, so, you know, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, I mean, those guys were all subdued by the passengers around them. Passengers are no longer being passive. I mean, nowadays, even unruly drunks get jumped and zip-tied by their fellow passengers. In this sort of environment, I just don't see someone taking down a 767 with the knife on a corkscrew. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 104. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is from a couple of sources. The first song, 7 Ghosts 1, is from the instrumental downloadable collection Ghosts 1 through 4 from Nine Inch Nails. The next 2 songs are from Mevio's Music Alley, music.mevio.com. When Irish Eyes Are Burning from the Ike Riley Assassination, a Chicago band that my son and I saw opening for the Pogues more than a few St. Patrick's Days ago, and Stupid Now by Bob Mould, the former Husker Du guitarist from his album District Line. Check out the show notes for links and all sorts of other stuff. Hey, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Facebook wall at the Travel Commons fan page. Post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to talk to me, sending in emails, tweets, or posting comments on the wall or the website. So, hey, heading out Thursday morning out to Spain. Amongst other things, I hope to collect some more content for the next episode. So until then, take care, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, no
not I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start